Okay, so page 83 is still in book one, and that's chapter, you know, 40. One, two, three, 48 to 74, so it has to be chapter 5 or 3. 48, 74. So this page 75 is chapter 4. I think that's right. And not that that matters. So I will start at the bottom. Ion, are you there, Ion? Are you ready? Say a syllable or two to indicate your interest.
Your acquiescence.
Your capitulation. See?
Taking a break,
see? He doesn't like Finnegan's Wake, even though he makes a big deal out of it. So we would start a little bit on page 82. Eight lines up from the bottom. Could start in the middle of the of page 82, but let's just do this arbitrarily. There's a sentence or two going into page 83. To this the other, Billy with the bull, who had mummed and mauled up to that, for he was hesitancy carried to excelsism, rather amusedly replied, would. So he's stuttering on the word would, but it's woo-woo, would you. So woo-woo, would you be grossly surprised, Hill, to learn that, as it so happens, I honestly have not such a thing as the loo, as the least chance of a tin pan crackler anywhere about me at the present moment. Stuttering again, moment. But I believe I can see my way, as you suggest, it being Yuletide or Judenfest, and as it's mad nuts, son, for you, when it's Hutter's Hare's Mon for me. Oh, Mon! Mon! Come on, man! Look at that, it's right there. I'll do that again. But I believe I can see my way, as you suggest, it being Yuletide or Judenfest, and as it's mad nuts, son, for you, when it's Hatter's Hare's Mon for me. To advance you something like 4 and 7 pence between hopping and trapping, which you might just as well have, boy, batch to buy JJ and S with. To buy, you have boy batches to buy JJ and S with. There was a minute silence before memory's fires rekindling, and then, heart alive, which at very first wind of gay and Wiswig's Wick's ears pricked up, the starving gunman, strike 'em pink, became strangely calm and forthright swore by all his lards, personal, that the thorn tree of Sheol might ramify up as Sheophon to the Lux Appointlux, but it would go good to him, sometime, Marx, Karl Marx, sometime, but he would go good to him sometime, Marx my word for it, for a chip off the old flint, in brackets, in the Nietzschean glossary, which purveys a prioric roots for aposteriorious tongues. This is that language in any sense of the world. So this is a comment on the language of Finnegan's Wake. This is nat, N-A-T, or not language at any sense of the world, or in any sense of the world. And one might as fairly go and kiss his sprogues as fail to certify whether the war trophy alluded at some lives earlier was that something like a jug to what, a coctable? Now, that was all in brackets, in the Nietzschean glossary, which purveys a prioric roots for a posteriorios tongues. This is not language in any sense of the world, and one might as fairly go and kiss his sprogues as fail to certify whether the war trophy alluded to some lives earlier was that something like a jug to what a coctable. Look up coctable in Roland McHugh's annotations, means to boil. Digest, bake. So what some think like a jug to what a coctable, a digestible. And remarking in languidly, seemingly much more highly pleased than tongue could tell at this opening of a lifetime, in the foretaste of the Dunbank Pearl Mothers and the boy to wash down which he would feed to himself in the Rudd Cow at Talat, and then into the good woman at Ringsend, and after her in at Conway's Inn at Blackrock, and first of all, cursed be all, where appetite would keenest be at the funeral fair or fun fane reel. Adam and Eve's, now you go back to page 3, the first page, and it says, past even Adam's, river run, the first line, past even Adam's, but here it's now Eve has the apostrophe S. Okay, so cursed be all where appetite would keenest be at funeral fair or fun fane reel, Adam and Eve's in Quantity Street by the grace of Gamey Queen Tailty, her will and testament, colon. You stunning little Southdowner, I'd know you anywhere, declaney. Let me truthfully tell you, in or out of the extinction of life, and who the hell else be your blanch patch on the bony part. Gold ball, I've struck this daylit, dilate night of nights, by golly. My hat, you have some bully German grit, Sundowner. He spud in his Faust axon. He toped the raw best, pardon. He poked his pick, a tip is a tap, and he tucked his friend to leave. And with French hen or the portly folium of haste and leisures about to continue that, the queer mixture exchanged the pucks and embrace or pug you pucksy as practiced between brothers of the same breast. Hillelujah, killelujah, Alan Allah, and having ratified before the god of the day their Torgen truth, which belittlers have schmall called the treating to cognac, turning his fez menial straight in the direction of Moscow's. Let's see what they say Moscow's is. Moscow or Mecca. He first got rid of a few Mitzmillers and Hirashus and levanted off. The Levant is in the Middle East. And levanted off with tubular gerbilance at a bull's run over the Assback Bridge, spitting his teeth on roofs with the 7 and 4 and Dangeld or Dangeld and their humeral hurlbat or other uncertain weapon of lignum vitae. What's lignum vitae? Lignum vitae, line 5. Hard American or West Indian wood used in medicine, but it's italicized. The humeral hurlbat or other uncertain weapon of wood in medicine, lignum vitae, but so evermore ruminescent of a toboggan poop, picked up to keep some crow plucking appointment with some rival Rialtos anywhere between Peerage and the Little Horn, while this poor Delaney, who they left along with the Confederate fender behind, and who albeit balls bluffed, bore up wonderfully wonder all of it with a whole number of plum-sized contusiums plus Alisalah bruised cockets all over him, reported the occurrence in the best way he could to the flabbergaze of the whole lab, giving the petty banners the military salute as for his excellencies the O'Daffy, in justifiable hope that in noble old Roman review of the hugely satisfactory conclusion of the negotiations and the jungle monkeyish agreement dean derivative, some lotion or fomentation of poppy heads would be generously exhibited to the parts at the nearest watch house in Vicar Lane, the white ground of his face all covered with diagonally red cross, non-fatal mammalian blood as proof positive of the seriousness of his character and that he was bleeding in self-defiance, stanched. Stanched means, I guess, to stop the blood. What do they got here? Stanch it. I heard about that. Stanching. Stanch it. I don't see anything on stanch it. Stanch it. Well, nothing there. Staunch it. Maybe everybody knows that means to stop the blood. And that he's bleeding in self-defense. Staunch it. From the nostrils, lips, pavilion, and palate, while some of his hitter's hairs had been pulled off his nut's head by Colt, though otherwise his all-around health appeared to be middling along, as it proved most fortunate that not one of the 206 bones and 501 muscles in his torso was a whit the worse for her whacking. Her who? So that's the end of that section from 83 into 84. So, what are we to make of this nonsense? Do you have a statement, Ion, why this is the third pitch in your version of the wake? Third page, rather. Why this area? Ion, speak. Do I have the wrong guy muted? Are you on this one? Nope. Well, we'll just have to bring in the peanut gallery.
All participants are now unmuted.
Since I can't get on. Look, that's not good.
That's no good.
So we get that one off. Seems to be Mike or Nick. Or does this help?
Does this help?
Yeah, that seems to be Greg. Greg Duffel. So we unmute Mike to see if he can speak. Yes. Seems to be Greg Duffel, but that brings in the sizzling. Is that Nick or Mike?
This is me, but I don't know where the sizzling is coming from, Bob. I hear it
Greg.
Too, but it's all clear.
Okay, so I just clipped Nick.
This is me, Bob.
Sizzle. Right, you have the sizzle, but not anymore. So anyways, do you guys have any idea what this page two is about? No. How could you even know? If I look up the prepackaged index, a working outline of Finnegan's Wake by somebody, can't remember who it was. It might be, I can't remember. Chapter 3, Chapter 4, pages 81 to 85. Encounter between attacker and adversary repeats the HCE CAD meeting. So around page 23, Humphrey Tripton Earwicker met the CAD in the park, and a scandalous interaction happened there that others observed. Now we're having a fight again. And I don't know where it's, this doesn't say where it is. Maybe in Phoenix Park again. Encounter between attacker and adversary repeats HCE CAD meeting. So we saw the bloodiness of the impact. But see, that's not what it's about. It's like a subatomic particle. If you go after the position, you miss the velocity. Isn't that the rule? If you go after the velocity, you miss the position. So as you read along a sentence here, you can go into each three or four words and find a world of suggestions. So you get bogged down on those, into those rabbit holes, if you want to get the meaning of the larger paragraph. So you can't get both at the same time, or it's difficult to get the details, which are a bunch of worlds, as opposed to the literate effect as you read along, you're getting a picture of the ground as the author is presenting it, and let's say the big picture. If you find a big picture, it is canceled by every few words in the details. Are you getting that?
Mm.
The Joyce made a book, and we saw the word lab in here. He made a book that was like looking at quantum particles. However, they were understood in the 20s or 30s, whatever the press releases said about them. But, you know, he had the principle of uncertainty and other things that were became journalistically well-known. So what are we, which level do you want to go into? Why Conway's Inn at Black Rock? That's in the middle of page, where is that? middle of page 83. That's an actual place in Dublin, Conway's Tavern at Blackrock, opposite the Good Woman Inn in Ringshead, Dublin. So, yes, somebody want to say something?
The one that jumped at me, Bob, is gay, and whiskey wigs, wicks, ears pricked up like... I've got a bit of feedback here, Bob. Is that me or you?
I don't know what it is. If I I don't know. Is that you?
Hello?
Is that Michael? Okay, are you talking? Yes. So that's you. Go ahead, Nick.
I'm muted, Bob.
Oh. Well, how come I just heard you?
Can you hear me? No, there's no...
Okay, so that's Michael. Okay, go ahead. I muted Michael.
Yeah, so the one that jumped out at me was the Wicks, Gay and Whiskey
Line
Wicks
five.
Wigs. Line 5, yeah. Ears pricked up. So I kind of got the image of a dog, his ears pricking up. The starving gunman.
So how does that help us? But what's the point in getting that image?
I'm asking you, Bob.
Don't pin me on this. I'm just hanging around for my friends. I'll unmute Michael, see if we get less echo or not. Yeah, go ahead.
You've still got an echo with me, though, have you, Bob?
No,
nope. That's better.
No echo with you. Yeah.
None. Yeah.
So, okay, you got a dog, so what? There's many images. Each word is an image on this page.
Non-fatal mammalian blood. That's really big.
What line is that?
That's on page 84, just before the sentence ends. It's about mid-page up, Bob. Almost.
Oh, yeah, non-fatal. Red Cross, non-fatal mammalian blood is proof positive of the seriousness of his character. Some fight, right? Proving that he had purpose. The white ground of his face.
Well, non-fatal mammalian blood would be power in the blood. That would be the eternal blood. Non-fatal.
James Joyce didn't know anything about that. If I am not going to participate...
I don't care what he knew. I'm just saying what I'm seeing in it, Bob.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, you can do that. That's all right, as long as you know what you're doing.
And, you know, that first part of the page from the top here, I can't take any specific section, but it feels like the Middle East process, peace process unfolding.
Mm. So. You mean the one right now?
Yeah, their negotiations and juggle monkeyish agreement, blah blah blah. Hugely satisfactory conclusion.
What the hell was that? It's like Cardi Bra going. Nervous dick there, Michael.
No, I'm just adding my fatic Finnegan's weight.
Okay. Yes, you're adding words to the page. You're supplementing Joyce's stuff.
Yeah, I think he that sort of participation, Bob. He wouldn't have done that all for no participation.
Yeah, now other people, why isn't Jack saying something, or Nan, or what's his name, Bertrand, or Bernardo?
I don't have too much to say, except it sounds like Christmas time or something at the end of 82. Yuletide or Yudenfest, I don't know. And most of that, it's really... really hard to understand. I got the last big sentence, you know, and you know where he got hit and all the bones in the body and stuff. But wow,
you're not going to understand it in the conventional way you get information, you know, from reading left hemisphere information. So we're looking at what's Joyce doing this for. And, you know, Marshall McLuhan spent his life translating or justifying Finney's Wake. making up reasons for it to be like this.
It's true what you said, Bob. As you were reading, I would find myself being set up for a thought form, and then he would just whip it away with the next few words.
Yeah.
And that seems to happen continuously, which is, I would say, part of the intent.
Yes, if you're listening to the radio
each time.
Yeah, if you're listening to the radio, you listen, and then the speakers shift into something else, and you follow that. Then they shift into something else, and you follow that. And you might, after a while, forget a lot of what was said, but you're following along. Speech makes it discontinuous. They may be on one theme, but there's all kinds of anecdotes said that remind you of other things if they mention celebrities. So this hyper-subjective wandering and drifting and disruption is the experience of the radio world of the 20s and 30s. So he seems to be making a painting of that. And if art is supposed to show people the reality they live in, something about what they live in they don't notice, he's sure doing a good job of how their brains are being massaged by non-book messaging. And yet everybody's values will be based on books at that point. They're not having a book experience.
Yeah, he's inviting almost like 100% participation because all of his incompleteness and strange words. And yet he's not...
Okay, that was Nick, I think. Back to you, Michael. You were saying, Michael. Is that Michael? Okay, is this Michael? No. Michael's being zapped. Because this is Nick, right? The open one is Nick. This is fitting at ease, what we're experiencing. He will have things interrupting as you're reading along. So I don't know why Nick or Mike can't, we can't hear them, but you go to Nick or Mike, the other one, looks like they got jammed. Looks like they've been disconnected. Okay, so what were you saying? Okay, so anybody, speak up.
To me, if I started reading this quickly, not to really get the meaning, just looking at the words and picking up some of the words, I kind of understand some of it. It doesn't make a real book to me.
Okay, look, that's what I'm saying. You can go towards the bigger meaning, and you could do that by speed reading it and then letting your mind notice some words and then put together a pattern. You'd make a pattern, not necessarily connected to what Joyce might have meant. But if you read slowly, then you would get bogged down into each couple of words, which could mean a lot of things to you. So you're not getting the meaning if you go fast, and you're not getting the meaning if you're going slow. There's no meaning in that sense.
Well, didn't you say that there's a cipher in there and it was written that way? So maybe...
Iron won't tell us anything about it. Ginny looked into the cipher mechanism. Mm-hmm. I didn't do much with it, but she did, and she followed the rules of how you apply a cipher. First of all, you have to find out what the cipher is, and in our case, Iron eventually told us the cipher is the word angel. Then you have to look it up and apply it to the method. And Ginny did that, and I don't think she got anything satisfactory from it. And then another time, Iron said, you read them to the left or right in some order of the pages. We're hard-pressed to get Ion to tell us right now what that method was.
Mm-hmm.
See, we got a problem here. Our mentor has boycotted the experience for whatever stupid reason.
But he gave you the page for some reason also.
Yeah, we're not going to find out anything unless he tells us later. He's playing a game, which I could object to, but I'm a kindly, sunny disposition character, and I can flourish it under any conditions.
Right.
So let's see if Scott. I think. Do they say something on the chat line about their condition? No.
Bob?
Yes. Oh, you're back.
Yes.
Good.
Is there an echo?
No. You had a racket coming out of Michael's thing. So go ahead, Nick. What were you going to say?
No, I just wanted to say that I'm back because you were coming in and out, and I just wanted to know if I was unmuted.
Yeah, were you zapped? I mean, I'm coming in and out. That's not what Nan's getting.
But you're very tinny, Bob. You sound as though you're in a void.
I know. I mean, I don't. What can I do about it?
So do you, Nick. Yeah.
Yeah, so do you, eh? You're a world of beasts. Now, look, here's what's funny. What we're doing here is the way you can see Finnegan's Wake written. It's different people. He told me, Joyce told me through the Evergreens that it's, you're in a pub, and everybody's talking at the same time, and you're trying to write down what you hear if you're the writer in the center of it. So you're just reading, you're hearing babble. And then he decided, well, that's what the radio experience is like. So I just unmuted Bert and Nick or Mike.
So Bob, what do you get from Finnegan's Wake? What is the, do you love Finnegan's Wake? You often suggest it to people.
I don't say I love it. I don't love anything, really. I think about it. I think about, okay, this crazy book by the greatest author up to that point, supposedly by the establishment, saying his Ulysses is very significant. And then he does this ridiculous work, and what's going on? Now, McLuhan makes sense out of it if you need sense. He explains what's going on in relation to the times and the media and the intellectual discussions of the day. So McLuhan's more fun than Finnegan's Wake. I will mute that again. See, that's weird coming out of South Africa. And I think Michael called back in, or Nick.
I'm here. Can you hear me, Bob?
Yeah,
now I think I can. I can hear you.
Okay.
I think I know where you are. You've come back in. So your former line has got the noise. Your former line is still there. Okay, the point is that these interruptions and crazy static is all through Finnegan's Wake. You know, that's what he's writing, and he's actually describing how people who had access to electric technology, what they were experiencing, which the guy in the farms in southern France, you know, there with his chickens, he ain't getting this experience. But this is happening in the urban world, and to the degree there was radio in the country, they would be tuning in, and there'd be static, and they couldn't hear it, and songs would come in and out. You can see that Joyce was doing that, but why write a whole book based on that experience? Well, then you realize, oh, he's writing the whole history of technologies, and he's showing trying to show the effects of all the different phases with different communication technologies, all presented as a radio program in the pub, but sometimes it's a TV show. And it's a very early form of TV.
Can you hear me, Bob?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of demonstrating that the content is not as important because here in Finnegan's Wake, it invites such a powerful participation by the reader. But it doesn't
or
give
indifference.
You,
most people are fucking indifferent.
Or indifference,
yeah.
But as we're reading and we're reading along, it really does invite you to try and figure out what's going on. This part, like someone stuttering, trying to complete the sentence, or someone trying to say something that they can't remember, and then you add in the word. And yet, it's not designed to give you what a text that would be set up like that would give you. For example, multiple choice test so that you can get a driver's license or, you know, something.
This is a test for a driver's license?
No, what I'm saying is that a participative text would give you something in the end, whether it's knowledge, a degree, something that you would get from that level of participation.
And you'd walk around being a dummy from that point on, because you knew something.
Yeah. Well, this book's like the radio.
He's showing it, Michael, he could be showing how the information environment is undermining everything, as we know now, obviously, with social media. But he could see it 100 years ago. See, that's maybe the prophecy of it. He's telling you people, and he says to me through the Evergreens, that, you know, he basically thought reading and writing were the only valuable communication skills. The whole electric age was a big disaster. So he's showing the disaster here.
It's chemistry, like you were having that conversation with Cameron and that new way of thinking in terms of chemistry, in terms of media ecology. You know,
like our drama, I recommend the drama of cognition conversation, which is a phrase of Marshall's. We're watching the drama of cognition on the page. I probably mentioned Fittings Wake a little bit in the conversation, but Michael heard it. He liked it. You're the Michael that posted on I and Bob, right?
Yes, Bob.
Yeah. So Michael got a lot out of it, especially if you're thinking that we're describing the world that Fittings Wake is showing. It's actually a commentary. Mm. On Finding His Wake, the drama of cognition.
I was given James Joyce's Ulysses. This is a tome of a book. It's like 1,200 pages. Have you read Ulysses?
Yes, and I've listened to it done by radio performers, so I've heard Irish voices doing it. So I've had the whole
experience.
So going
back to what you were saying earlier on, it's the book, its introduction starts off, "It's no accident that the last lines of Ulysses read, Trist Zurich, Paris, 1914 to 1921. Joyce had to scurry with his family from city to city in his attempt to avoid the dangers of World War I, as he created a beautiful book in Europe bent on self-destruction. He seems from the outset to have anticipated Tom Stoppard's brilliant joke in Traversies. What did you do in the Great War, Mr. Joyce? I wrote Ulysses. What did you do?" I mean, right. Seriously? Bob, have you, this book is crazy.
Right. And look, at the end of Fittings Wake, you got Paris, 1922 to 1939. It's like a diary, the two books.
Yes.
Wow.
Okay.
So the... I like thinking and talking about the Wake more than reading it. Reading is stupid. Sometimes you read it and it's interesting, but I'm not going to get... There, many people in our Fittings Wake group in New York, they were trying to figure out what was going on, what was happening in this scene, and they tried to figure out who did what to who. And I'd say, that's ridiculous. You can't tell who's doing what. But there are many books that present pretty good guesses, page by page, of what's going on. But that's people looking for a book experience, the story.
If Joyce wanted us to know that, he would have written very clearly what he was meaning.
Well, he would have done it more clearly for his Wake, which was Ulysses. That was Ulysses, the ultimate book, the final book, the final novel. I mean, if you know of it, you go at the end, he's got a whole chapter of questions with all kinds of scientific answers, you know, quizzing the effects of the day by a group of scientists, so to speak. Very detailed. So he had to study all kinds of knowledge systems and stick it all in. And like I say, generally he used the Encyclopedia Britannica. So Ulysses is pretty ridiculous, but not as bad as The Wake. And he presents a history of literary styles and all kinds of different things in Ulysses, which you can see. But you don't see, nobody can agree on Fittings Wake. Now, this really is the mirror for today. I was talking to Clinton, I think, and Blake yesterday. Who can get the monopolistic position to say, okay, this is what society should do? This is never going to be determined right now who's got the best advice, right? So we're going to have a collision. That's inevitable. And in a sense, Joyce, if you think artist is a prophet, he's saying, we're going to end up like this book is presenting. And you better turn off the radio and these horrible things are happening or you're going to have a big collision at the end. I think he could see that.
Yeah.
And so he's warning us. Now, here's the thing. There are sentences. Let's just go to page 614. This is the page that Don Thiel always quoted. this explains the book pretty well. Okay, is everybody there?
Not yet.
614.
Yep.
So you go to the middle of the page. And this was written very early, December 1923. The book's like only 1 year old. And if you look at the middle where it says one line, what has gone, how it ends? Question mark. Mm. You see that? So
yeah.
He's done all this babble. Okay, he's got to end it. And talking to him or with Ion, he just decided to stop it. You know, gone on for 17 years. He didn't figure anything out, or he wasn't happy with it. And much that was on the cutting room floor, he thought was better than he put in the book. But it's kind of a desperate ending. So he goes, what has gone? Okay, what has been lost? And how does it end? How it ends? Then he says, begin to forget it. It will remember itself from every side with all gestures and each our word. Today's truth, tomorrow's trend. That's one of the most profound sentences because that's what we're in today. An endless replay of news information about everything fucking telling us what we're supposed to think about it. And we don't have to remember what happened. It's constantly being presented to us, right?
Yeah.
You know, we're looking at the Android meme, remember itself from every side with all the points of view and each our word, any topic. Today's truth is tomorrow's trend, yet people know that truth kind of doesn't last long because other truths and other effects show up, which become the new trend. So that's how it ends. He's fucking right on in describing the last 30 years, so to speak. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he's saying, forget it! Drop it! Which is what Ian says. Memory's not going to serve us well anymore. The memory's being done by the Android meme memory. So it's remembering itself. You guys don't have to do nothing. You know, they say the computer has everything about you. McClure used to say back in the 70s that the databanks know more about you than you'll ever know. So all about you is remembered. And you don't need to remember any of that stuff anyways. As long as you got your rent paid. And if you didn't pay it right, they'll show you, look, you screwed up this and you have to go with it. So it does, memory's obsolete for humans on a practical level. Okay, so then he says, now this is really funny, so begin to forget it. Then he says, remember, forget! Forget, remember? It's a joke. Remember to forget. Yeah. Okay, you better fucking forget. What? Well, remember to forget. Well, I remember to forget. No, forget! So that's pretty good. That's a good joke. Forget, remember? Which is like the contradictions of all advice given to anybody else by someone who thinks they know something. They're basically giving you contradictory advice all the time. Like Ian says, there's two conversations always going on. Okay, so we've forgotten. So then he goes, have we cherished expectations? Does that mean have we expectations that we cherish? Do we have any left? Have we paid enough attention to our expectations? Are we for liberty of pensiveness? No, perusiveness. I have mine marked over so I sometimes can't read it. Are we for liberty of perusiveness? Why after what for where? So he's getting into the 6 degrees of separation. Why, what, how, when, where? A plain planned Lifeyism, it's the river Liffey flows through Dublin, but it can be Lifeyism and nothing to do with the river. Assemblements, a Blania's conglomerate horde. Now, that's what we got here. The conglomerate horde is what he's been presenting all through the book. Now we're coming to the end. And what's he say on the notes? 614. There's a speech by the famed Irish leader Parnell who gets scandalized like Humphrey Chimpton Earwicker in the park. In 1885, he said, no man has a right to fix the boundary of the march of a nation. So that's line 15. The pink, where is that? Fincense, nonsense, tuck up. Oh, yeah, for... Right above what is gone, how it ends. For new mon set a marge to the merge of unnotions. Initian one's a game. And he had said, no man has a right to fix the boundary of the march of a nation. Now, that's a good guess, but actually the words can mean a lot of other things. Unnotions. Nothing to do with the March of the Nations, you know, forgetting, a world of no notions. So back down to Ablania. Ablania was Ptolemy's name for Dublin. Ptolemy, you know, a geometer of 200, 300 BC, AD, I think. Let's see, so Dublin's conglomerate horde by Dim Delty Diva. Diva is P.S., I don't know what P.S. is, Pan-Slavonic, I don't know, girl, some language for girl. So then he repeats it, forget! So then this is the important paragraph. Here's his description of the book. If you need a description of the book, and it's not a book, it's a radio show, so it's not even going to be accurate, but it's going to be a good stab by Joyce and a fake explanation, okay? So he says, our homo mill-wheeling Vico cyclometer, and the philosopher Vico is the framework for a lot of the wake, and he's calling it, you know, goes through cycles, so it's a traveling device, a Vico cyclometer, a tetradomational, look, you got the word tetrad there, a tetrad, I make a lot out of that. I take that one little six letters and make a, look at that, there it is, oh, fucking tetrad, you know, you make a big deal out of it, mountain of a molehill. A tetradomational gazebo choroticon, you got the word icon in there. What is it? It's the mammalusion known to every schoolboy scandaler, be he Maddie, Marky, Lukey, or Jonadonk. It's always the four evangelists, or the four people, or the four bedposts, they're always in there. Autokinetonetically, so that's like talking about some sensory or machinic kind of operation, autokinetonetically pre-provided, so the Vico cyclometer is pre-provided with a clapper coupling smelting works ex-progressive process. So I'm explaining what he's saying here. I'm giving you a pattern of what the book's about before you know anything about the book. I'm offering a clapper coupling melting works ex-progressive process. Then in brackets, for the farmer, his son, and their homely codes. Many people like to, you know, explain that as Father, Son, Holy Ghost. For the farmer, his son, and their homely codes, known as egg burst, egg blend, egg burial, and hatches, hatch can. Those are four phases. And all of that receives through a portal vein the dialytically separated elements of precedent decomposition of the very pet purpose of subsequent recombinations. So you see the recombining of a dialectic of parts and separating them and re-putting them back together? That's sort of the way he's been writing the book. So that the heroticisms, catastrophes, and eccentricities transmuted by the ancient legacy of the past, print, type by tope, letter from litter, word at ward, with sendence of Sundance, that could be ritual, since the days of Pluny and Columcellas, when Giuseppe Provenci and Margaret swayed over the all too ghoulish and ill-lyrical and inhumanic in our mutter nation, all anastomosaically, the book is a mosaic, anastomosaically assimilated and predator-identified periodically. In fact, the same old game, old atomic structure, I finished the old one. So all this stuff that he's recombining is just the same old story. A highly charged, now here he brings in the electronic machinic, a highly charged with electrons as hop hazards can effective it, may be there for you. And then the rooster goes, cock-a-looka-looka, because it's supposed to be the morning. Maybe there for you. Okay, what's going to be there for you after the cock-a-loo-a-loo-a-loo? When cup, platter, and pot come piping hot, so you're being delivered your breakfast, as sure as herself pits hen to paper, that's where the Belinda the hen back at page 122 found the piece of paper and the letter, scratched it up. As sure as, so this comes delivered to you, as sure as yourself pits hen to paper, and they're scribing scrawled on eggs. Of course, so, and in effect as. So there's cause and effect right there. And then that's the end of the book, and then the letter they're looking through all the book is presented. Here, and we go on dirt dump. Now there's the synchronicity of today, all about dirt. It came up today, the previous hours of the show. So do you see he's describing the cyclical, the effects preceding causes. He played with the words and pretended he was a machine playing with the words and ended up with an electronic structure. So that paragraph, Don Thiel would quote in every essay he did on James Joyce. So back to 83. So that's an example on page 614 of him pretending to explain the book.
Bob, that issue of not having to remember, and the issue with that goes way back into one of Plato's writings, where he writes a conversation between Theist and Thamus. And Theist.
Who? Says, oh, Theist?
Theist. Theist.
How do you spell it?
T-H-E-U-T-H. Theist.
Oh, sometimes sounds called like, Thoth.
Sounds like a lisp. Yeah. Thoth. Okay.
Yeah, Thoth. No, Thoth.
Yeah, yeah. Thoth. All right. So Thoth and says, Thoth and Thamus. It's not very
okay.
long, but it captures this. So Thoth says, letters will make Egyptians wiser and give them better memories. It is a specific both for the memory and for the wit. Thamus replied, O most ingenious Thoth, this discovery of yours will create forgetfulness in the learners' souls, because they will not use their memories. They will trust to the external written characters and not remember of themselves. The specific which you have discovered is an aid not to memory, but to reminiscence. And you give your disciples not truth, but only the semblance of truth. They will become bearers of many things and will have learned nothing. They will appear omniscient and will generally know nothing. They will be tiresome company, having the show of wisdom without reality.
Right. Now, that is one of the most famous sections of Plato, especially after McLuhan. He has that section in, I think, The Medium is the Massage. Any media ecologist goes to that. So there's Plato and Socrates predicting or trying to show the effects of the alphabet and the new writing world, and yet McLuhan will say they had no clue to the effects of media, and he would say the sophists knew more about effects than Plato and Socrates, yet Plato wrote it. See, so McLuhan's beginning supposition is wrong from many people's point of view. It's not, no, these dialecticians, Plato and Socrates, they had it down, they laid it out. And then the argument continues. But what? So if you emphasize that section, then all this talk that McLuhan goes through about the effects gets weakened, at least his historical lineage of important people bypasses the Plato guys, the Plato thing you just quoted.
Yeah, this to me, when I read it, was a prediction of the tech body, because what he's talking about here is that there's a vacuum that's created through not remembering, you know, letting the letters remember. It's that vacuum into which the tech body climbs and takes over. You know, that's the seed of giving the power to.
But you can be more of a generalist and say it began with speech. People lost their ESP by engaging in tribal speech more and more.
Mm.
You could apply it to any technological phase.
Yeah.
And then you have Ian comes in and said, well, you guys think there's a problem. There ain't no problem. And there was no beginning for it. You know, there's that, the Ionic school of thought, so to speak, about it. So when you know all the different arguments, because you've made yourself aware of them over 20, 30 years study, you look at the whole thing as an argument, like Finnegan's Wake. So you could take any topic, any theme in history philosophy, and show all the different people's arguments all the way through. In retrospect, it looked like a page of Finnegan's Wake. Everybody arguing, not getting anywheres. And so that sort of is a plug for the mystical, or go off into the cave and be silent. Do not engage with social mortar. You end up on page 614. So there's endless thoughts about this. And Joyce tried to show the endless thoughts. So actually this book shows the thinking of the tech body. If we imagine the tech body, as you're going to hear in my private session, is whipping around, counting all the votes and creating a result that nobody expects, that's rapid electronic circuitry or whatever it is going, algorithms. If you try to picture the speed of that, this book does it. This book is showing you the tech body's mind or organizers zipping through all the data, right?
Yes, yes.
And it's scanning the globe because you got to have all the languages, and all the languages are in here.
And it's so incongruous as well, Bob. There's no logic to it.
Well, what's logic? McLuhan says each sense has a logic or a rationale. You know, acoustic space has a logic, which is very different from the eyeball. See? But we tend to think the eyeball is logic. So you're expressing a visual bias there when you say there's no logic. There is logic here in terms of multimedia patterning going on, but you have to find out about that. You have to read McLuhan or something to see that this could be in the book.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, to say there's no logic is obvious. Well, why did he do it? The why is what's important, and the how, and then the where and the what. All the time, he's undermining. He said through the Evergreens that he made sure that every possible interpretation or theory would be undermined at bottom. So he made sure there was no meaning to be found in the end. Now, that would be a silly thing to do maybe 500 years ago, but not today, to point out where people are looking for meaning. They need to be reminded that you're looking at a void with nothing underneath it, or nothing relevant to the anthropomorphic, maybe. So he predicted our condition so precisely, but I'm talking around the book. You know what I mean? I'm not going into the book. I can show you quotes that point to what I'm saying here and there. Look at page 349. In italics, the description of television. So he takes John Logie Baird, B-A-I-R-D. He was a Scottish inventor who presented a mechanical TV in like 1924. He demonstrated in London or different places. And you'll find that the parts of that crazy mechanical contraption are listed all through this italicized section on page 349, 350. So it's carefully built up from this guy's invention, but at the beginning, in the first lines, he says, in the heliotropical no time, so he sees the electric age is going to bring in no time, following a fade of transformed tuff, that's one of the characters in the dialogue in the rest of the chapter, and pending its Visi version, a Metternich reglow of beaming bat, that's the other guy, the Baird board bombardment screen. That's television. That's what it becomes.
Yeah.
A bombardment screen.
Very good, yeah.
If tastefully taught, uranium satin tends to teleframe and step up to the charge of the light barricade. So you take the famous sentence, the charge of light brigade, it becomes the charge of the light barricade, that's television. Now, can you imagine, you know, you're reading this in the 40s, or if it was serialized sometime in the 20s, 30s, you're reading it, you're not educated enough to know that this is referencing Baird Board's fucking TV screen. You don't even know what Baird refers to. So, it's almost like Joyce mimed the world. He said, okay, I'm going to make a world. And he said, it'll take them 200 years to figure out what's going on. Now, it happened a lot faster because so many people got into it. And, you know, Joyce, in a sense, didn't foresee the information society's services where everybody get together and pool their resources really fast. You know, in the 60s and 70s, in the James Joyce societies that gathered around the world. So, they came up with breaking down this stuff, but they had to do a lot of work to look up dictionaries and stuff in different languages to get each line.
Well, he don't.
So there's something organizing going on there. Logic, a pattern that's being spelled out, but nobody, not many people who even know about the wake I read some of it and know about 349, unless they buy the annotations. But being around McLuhan, you got this early. He was doing this in the 50s, 10, 15 years before any other people. So if you're around McLuhan, you got way ahead of everybody in relation to this book and information and society that was unfolding.
Come on.
You know that Kanye West did an interview with Joe Rogan. It's the first time I've ever heard him, you know, just speak freely. And his
what interview with Joe Rogan? Who?
Kanye West. The rapper. Kanye West.
Oh, did that happen? That's been built up for 8 months or something. It finally happened?
Yeah, it came out last night, Bob. But the thing about it is that he has a stream of consciousness which, if you try and make sense or stay with specific things, will lose you, but you get the gist of the whole thing so beautifully. And it's very much like someone speaking Finnegan's Wake. It really...
Right. Now, you're saying this... Are you saying Kanye, in the interview, babbled on discontinuously?
No, I don't think it was babble at all. It was a stream of consciousness. And he wasn't speaking in sentences. And Joe Rogan probably said... spoke for 10 minutes in the whole 3 hours.
Oh, really?
Kanye, how do you say it? Kanye. Yeah, he just went on streams of consciousness, sentences that sometimes lasted 10 minutes. And
what the fuck, was he stoned?
No, that's how he speaks. You can see that's how he functions. And
he's in effect of the information overload, especially
right.
The acoustic overload, because he's in the music industry and he has to hear all the other competition, right? So he's processing his shit.
He's Finnegan's Wake now running for presidency.
and with the Wake, and especially McLuhan, you have a different perspective on it than the average citizen. Most people say, turn that fucker off. What an idiot.
Yeah.
The white people would say that just because they don't talk or think that way. Some of the brothers might like it, but overall, it's irresponsible. Why does he think anybody would take him seriously talking like that?
Normal.
I don't think you can talk another way. I don't think you can talk another way, Bob. That's how he talks.
Yeah, and he would, if I was his tutor, I would get him out of that pretty quickly. Because I'd give him some stuff that he wouldn't, he's talking around the words acoustic space, or talking around white privilege, which is the effect of the printing press. You know, a few key points or percepts would shut off his mind with his not knowing things. Doesn't have the right words.
Well, that's what he says they did when they medicated him, when he was institutionalized, was they just shut him down so that that wouldn't happen.
Right.
So what, how did he get into this condition? What was he on drugs 25 years ago?
No, I think he's naturally like this, Bob. I think he's a product of... he is Finnegan's, he's what James Joyce was pointing out, is how we're going to be.
Well, that's the Odd Owl Tactile Society.
Mm.
The Odd Owl Tactile Neighborhood, like where did he grow up? What was his environment?
And just like there's a reason why Trump is in the White House, because he reflects, he's analogous mirrors. He reflects in the society we're in and the way we communicate. This is why Kanye has risen up too and is in the position he's in now. He also appears to reflect.
Wait a minute, Michael, you sound like him. Restate your. What the hell did you just say? Anybody notice that? That Michael is throwing in wrong syllables?
Anyway,
do it again.
You get the message. Well, Trump and Kanye both represent where we are at the moment in ourselves because of the environment we live in. They are a crystallized reflection of that.
Well, that's why I say that McLuhan is the most useful, practical end of society, end of the end times social knowledge that kids should get in at least high school. Well, it's very simple. McClellan points, if you got a teacher who can reasonably explain it and generally understands it, it would be very useful for kids to understand why this phenomenon is happening around them.
Yep.
Or at least have a thought categories for it. So that's where McClellan did kind of wrap it up. He said James Joyce tackled problems that Einstein and regular scientists didn't even know existed. And he did, if you look at it as a communication science. And you don't know that unless you're reading McLuhan. No Joyce scholars understood it before McLuhan. So McLuhan is the guy who, for social practicality, came up with a solution. How to look at what is driving people nuts today.
I'm sure when Joyce came out with his first excerpts of this, people wanted to treat him the same way they would probably want to treat Kanye, which is to medicate him and put him away. They would have thought.
Yeah, there were completely. There were famous writers who Jung or Freud or somebody put him down.
Jung couldn't stand him. Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't talk like that in person. He wrote like that. He was writing not to people, but to something that was taken over, which is, you know, the Android meme and then the tech body. You see, here's one guy in the world who has a unique perspective on it, Marshall McLuhan, a totally unique, different view of McLuhan, of the wake, which nobody took serious in the early 50s. And then in the 60s, he becomes a public oracle because he specialized in the correct person and the correct artifact fitting his wake. That's why he became famous, because what he was saying dealt with the present more than anybody else. Even though most people didn't understand it, they knew what he was saying. I mean, they knew the importance or the relevance, because he was naming problems and patterns that were pretty obvious going on in society, but he had something to say. He even said that the regular economists and experts didn't have the guts to pretend to know what's going on. McLuhan pretended to know because he found out the best pretense, fitting his wake, to translate. And then translate the present. I mean, you don't become famous because of some conspiracy to prop you up. That can be a factor for a while. But considering nobody knew what he was saying, why did he become famous? Because he had the right words. He was the poet of his time. And nobody could stop that. And then everybody walked around puzzling their heads, you know, scratching their heads, wondering why McLuhan got internationally notorious. Does that leave you stumped? Because I've wrapped it up, put it away, nothing more needs to be said.
We're trumped, Bob, we're trumped.
Yes, trumped. Have you guys read that essay where this guy, nobody knows who he is, I think he read some of my stuff, but he talked about how Trump read McLuhan's Playboy interview in March 69, because he would have read Playboy anyways, being a young, horny guy. He would have been about 23 then. And he instinctively picked up something about what McLuhan was saying and applied it in his life. This guy makes a good case for it. And, you know, some of the professors back at the University of Toronto could make a case that McLuhan was a wild card and should be arrested. But they were based on literate logic and, you know, old values of responsibility. I mean, nobody went out and pontificated and said, well, I don't really understand myself. I don't really understand myself. Well, what the hell are you saying? He said that in Playboy. And he said, I don't understand what I think until I say it. I don't know what I think until I say it. But these are very subtle, tactile effects that one can understand when you're on drugs. And if you're studying a lot like he did, reading a million books, you get to that information overload of a heated brain that ends up saying stuff like that. And for most people, it was silly. It was comic, but it actually made sense. As more and more people of the baby boomer generation took drugs and approximated the experience. He had students saying, you know, I've done LSD and all that. This fitting his wake that you're reading us is much like my LSD experience. And he was the only professor hearing that from students because he was the only one presenting fitting his weight. So the whole phenomenon of McLuhan and Joyce is something to study. That's what I study, the whole fucking environment. You know, the book is a tiny thing, and I've read through it like three times, but it's the first time by myself, and that was a long, tedious thing. And then, but in a group, it was a lot easier and more fun. The best way to do it in a group, because everybody, it ends up talking about a lot of things not in the book, like I'm doing right now. So we need to bring in Ion to find out why page 83.
Yes.
Why 83, why? Ion? But Ion is not speaking. I consider it very irresponsible of Ion not to speak.
Is Ion baking? Is that the sound that we're hearing, or is that someone else?
No, it's not coming out of his expression or his voicemail. The little image of the microphone by his name. There's no red marks coming off it. So Ion's not saying anything. Anyways, but I can carry on the book without Ion. But I'm interested in Ion's take on it. That's why we're doing it. And he sulks in the background.
Sigh, sigh, sigh. You're missing the point. Make your point and get on with it.
We're missing the point. Well, tell us.
You're talking about the volume when you should be focusing on what's the words, what's being said. You're worrying about the volume.
Well, we could do that.
Being said.
We could do that. I'm pointing out...
But then you'd be taking on mediaecology as debates, wouldn't you?
Taking on mediaecology as debates. I don't know. Is that what you said?
The debate. Yeah, taking on mediaecology as the debate.
Or the debate.
Well, mediaecology was no such phrase back then. It was invented by McLuhan and Neil Postman in 68 at Fordham.
We're not then. We're not then. We're now. So let's apply it. Words work.
Okay, so in... everybody was doing mediaecology all through existence. Yeah, I agree with that. So, okay, it's a debate. And that's the dream of cognition, which if you all listen to me and Cameron may be the best scholar of McLuhan today in terms of applying himself and really checking out all kinds of stuff that McLuhan wrote that most people don't have the time to read or find out about. But and I'm up there with him. He does more work than me now because I have to analyze the latest mediaecologist known as Ion, which nobody else dares to do. So I'm living more in the present than Cameron. But our dialogue, which Michael heard and was very impressed with, I assume, by his commentary on the site. Right, Michael? You want to plug the thing?
It was enjoyable, Bob, and you were well-behaved.
Yes, and I told him we talked as if we were agreeing, and I said, well, I haven't talked to you, Cameron, and done any recording because we basically don't agree. And I picked up a little of stun on his part because he doesn't know what we don't agree. I don't make a point about what we don't agree. I look for areas of agreement when I'm doing somebody like that. So I don't know if we'll get into the argument in part two. But it's very valuable what he does, but it's totally irrelevant from my point of view. And so my big essay that I just produced, 100 pages, is going to be an answer to what he does and an answer to what everybody else does. We'll see how that goes. But Ion, you're saying, I'm glad you dropped in, you're saying there's a debate. I certainly know there's a debate. What?
We just dropped in for a drink.
Yeah, and you're just visiting, as they say down in Georgia. This is about the drama of cognition, which is a debate among the senses. And Joyce made an allegory out of it. He has each sense become a character in the book. And then each extension of the senses become a character. So you get on page 52, television kills telephony and brothers broil. The eyes demand their turn. Let them be seen. So, okay, so Ion, propose your angle on the debate. What's the debate from your aspect? You want to analyze the words? What?
Sand.
Yeah, jeez, the sand. I said, I don't see that word anywhere. Show me where it is on page 83.
Third line, second word.
You might just as well have boy batches?
Yep.
That's you might just thing. As well have.
Sundance.
Sundance. No. Yes. But anyways, Ion's saying you might just as well have. How's that ascension? See, you can't defend your case, Ion.
Don't need to. Not a war.
Well, why don't you help PD? Nobody here gets what you're saying. Why don't you explain it?
Welcome. Well, welcome to Bob's world, eh?
No. It's not my world. I'm not encapsulated in seven words, or is it six? Six words. You could make me encapsulate it, but that ain't going to last very long. You see, Ion is as absurd as Finnegan's Wake in responding to Finnegan's Wake.
Typically.
Right, so you could have taken, look at this, more highly pleased in the middle of the book. Yeah, when you're a Senate, you're more highly pleased. You could take a whole bunch of different collection of words and say that's ascend.
Okay.
So what's going on this page? I'm directing that at you, Ion. What's happening on this page? I said, what's happening on this page?
The drama, the real life onset starts. And like, there's a problem, there's an issue, there's a good part, a bad part, there's something to save. However dastardly, there must be something left to save.
Yeah, this is the fight. Like they say, it's a replay of the meeting in the park. Well, a little more details about the meeting in the park. That was a fight where the fray begins, right? The struggle, the argument, the war.
Okay.
You're picking this page, which is interesting to say that's happening about here in the book. You know, I don't reject that. That's pretty good. You managed to make one or two good sentences, because you don't say much in these sessions, which are applicable. You want to say more about it? So there's the battle.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know we can go to any page and see all kinds of battles, but maybe this did stand out. The thing I kind of noticed is the guy's bloody face.
Non-fatal mammalian blood is stored.
Right.
Whose bloody face? There's a picture? I don't have the book.
Well, we're not filling you in. You got to participate. You got to have a computer and click on the page so you can at least look at the page.
I barely have a phone, man.
All right, well, don't bring in your problems here. Just listen. But anyways, non-fatal mammalian blood. As a proof positive of the seriousness of his character. And he was bleeding in self-defense. You can see human pride and stubbornness in that section. But if it was a cartoon, you would see that scene, then it would move on to another scene rapidly. So the book is offering, you know, rapid turnover of scenes. Visually, then there's the acoustic radio track. What do you say about that, Ion?
Well, just the flow, ebb and flow. Cognition has its repose.
Yes, that's, I like that phrase. Yeah, and then it's action. Action and then repose.
Well, the ebb and maybe. They're calling for it. You don't necessarily have it yet, but that's the suggestion. That's the prescription.
Yeah.
Now to see if they do it.
Right. When we do in the private session, the people hear me discuss light and darkness, figure and ground, the ebb and flow of water, the ebb and flow action that Ion's getting at, cognition and repose, that seems to be the universal movement. Is that the movement of being for little man and not ascended?
Maybe.
You know, the ebb and flow. I think people can see that. It's a cliche. It's what people, if they're relaxed, they know that's how the day's going to go. There's going to be an ebb and a flow. It's like the biggest constant.
Okay.
You have any thoughts, Bert?
Yes, one thing that I got through listening to you reading it, Bob, is that it gave me the effect of like a radio, like every five words was like changing the station.
Yep.
And I was caught myself, you know, listening to the five words that were said before and then trying to catch up, just like when you switch a radio and change it, the old AM radio where people used to change the station, go out, and they try to try to line it up to the previous station, then it come turn to another station. So that's the effect that I got from listening.
Well, that's what how I introduced the wake is imagine Joyce going up and down the shortwave radio. That's the initial idea what's going on.
Yeah.
So you have heard me say that before, but it's the first time you saw it in the talk on a page.
Well, actually, yes, because I was actually followed through. I have the book. I have Finnegan's Wake. So I was actually following through the words.
Yeah, you were looking
reading
at
them. And listening. Yes, looking at them and listening.
Right, and for the first time you could see the radio point that I had said to you many times.
Yes, exactly. But I could see also how you could take five words, what they're saying, and you would have a scenario laid out. And that's what fell throughout the book. Visually,
yeah, so
like the television.
Now, Bert, you're looking at the words as words. Often he organized the letters with a mathematical precision on a whole other level. So you don't just look at words. Yeah, you look at the letters themselves. Like he might write a line with E every seventh letter, E. And he just write a stupid mechanical thing based on that pattern.
Wow.
What is that pattern, Ian, that I don't know if it's top secret or what. Remember how you said the pages span out from a point to the left, further to the left, each page, and then to the right, a certain part of each page. What was that? That sequence. I think I bring this up every show, and he never answers it. Apparently he gave it to me confidentially, and he won't tell anybody. Well, I know that you go from one page, you can go to the left, like jump every second page. So you read the page 83, and then you go to page 81, and then to 79, and some kind of sequence like that, but you also, what?
No, I was just saying, you go backwards, and it would make sense.
Or forwards. But the point is you don't read it like a book, you know, page to page to page numerically. You leap, and I gave the leaping pattern. You leap a page or two, and then that's the actual order that you read it in. but Ian won't repeat the idea. I don't know if he doesn't want anybody to know it yet in the general audience. Stu, we could make millions from it.
I thought he once told Scott how to do it.
Yeah, he said it to somebody. It was said in public, I think.
Yeah.
But Ian won't say it again. No, not that. This is the way you read the pages, the order of the pages. You don't go 83, 80, 45. You go 83, 85, 87, 89.
Well, maybe Scott will remember, or maybe he took notes, and then he would let us know.
Yeah, Scott, let us know. Oh, I've got Scott on mute, sorry. Okay, Scott, you're unmuted.
Maybe he's asleep.
He probably took his marbles and went home.
Yeah.
Well, you remember to ask him next time he shows up. But, Ian, why don't you tell us the pattern again?
Because it's your system, our bus stop interrupt.
It's my system, bus stop interrupt. That's like Finnegan's, isn't
no.
it?
No. You base something on something you gauge. And that's individual to you. Now, the condition is the same. It's all big picture.
I don't know what that is. Don't blame me, Ion.
Someone's sleeping.
Cow. Jeans in the barn. But what? Okay, Ion, something's based on something is based on something. Whosoever will, Ion, and we want to do Phineas Wake. So hold forth like you always do.
What about Bert?
Bert's there. He doesn't know fuck all. He just thinks it's a radio show. He's just starting out, Carolyn. Oh, you mean Bert? It's only 8 o'clock, Carolyn. No, it's 8:30. Oh, sorry. It's 8:30. I guess we got to stop. Thanks a lot, Ian. Very little contributed tonight.
Well, more than you deserved.
What? What'd you say?
More than you deserved.
More than you
deserved. Oh, look at that. Look, he makes up, like he brings in old war wounds. We don't even know why they're brought up, but he conveniently brings them up to him, cutting his weight for fuck's sake.
Yawn.
Thanks a lot. I put up with the Egyptian Book of the Dead. Did you bounce it off, contributing to the wake? But we'll put it out there. I'm sure it means something that I won't respond to the wake run by Bob. Maybe we'll get someone else to do this, and then Ian would respond. My knowingness is too big. What'd you say? Yeah. What was that? Anybody know what that means?
I got him, yeah.
He won't. Yeah. Okay. Well, okay. Another fantastic session. Finding the deep meaning of the babble of the first part of the 20th century. A great show. Tremendous show. Much was learned. And millions will be made for the lucky one. We like to thank it's like after a Trump-Pence debate.
History belongs to the defeated.
Yeah. It's like they all say, I think that lady yelling and screaming all through the last debate, and then at the end, what an amazing debate! Thank you very much, and we'll see you tomorrow, another day in the groundhog world of our time. Okay, so we'll end there, and I'll just say that I'm not that keen sometimes to go into the details on the page. So those that want to know what each page is, and they like the exploration potential of Phineas Wake, they said, man, I could spend 10 years on this, and they want to find something to do for 10 years, so they would not be happy with me just skimming over the surface. They want to get into the details. Well, I have no problem with that, but I'm not doing it here unless somebody encourages it. So you guys have to...
Okay.
I blame you guys. Again, you guys have made it a miserable experience because you don't fucking say much. Thank Mike for saying a few things. Nan said something.
Whoever stopped the presses, and whoever stopped the presses with the yawn, that was encouraging.
Yes.
I didn't stop the presses with a yawn. What does that mean? That there's somebody yawned and I didn't stop the presses?
There was,
anybody know what
I picked
mean?
It up. Yeah, well, as we went through Finnegan's Wake, someone on the line was going, and they were also going, they were making another funny noise like a horse.
Yes.
It sounded like
I heard a couple of those, yes. That's typical. I'm used to those sounds here.
Mm-hmm.
I don't take them personally. I've heard them many times. All right. I don't have to fucking run it anymore.
The problem with conditioned responses is they're so conditioned.
Well, that's what we have you here for, to come up with unconditioned responses.
Mm-hmm. You got something back then. Good for you.
Well, we got one or two. I think we would like more.
Well, it's early.
You say go into the words, and you won't go into the words.
Yawn. That's a word.
Okay, I'll mute everybody, and Bert and Carolyn can take over.
Thank you, Bob.
And yeah, one to us, too.
Thanks, Bob.
What'd you say?
Brian wants to be muted,
mute
too.
Us too.
yes. Okay, well, not many people thank me. I don't think that was enough.
Uh-oh.
Let's hear that again.
Uh-oh.
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks,
Bob.
Thank you,
thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bob.
Thanks, Bob. Thanks, Bob. You bunch of phonies. Why the hell you don't even
need
it?
You fucked this thing up empirically. It's worth it. So the three people
the
that
agree ending, Bob provides a hilarious ending.
Might have paid 37 worth of
stupid. Now I am talking.
Stupid ass book.
I go on and on with this pattern recognition.
Ruined it for them. Forever.
Hyper pattern recognition.
Now you demand to be hypothetically.
Yes, that was a joke, Mr.
That you require your apostolic faith and doctrine to be a